that all of that goes out into the universe and helps create a new world, one person at a time. So thank you. Oh, so, all right, I'm not going to cry now. So, first of all, I want to say it. Karen and Hugh are out on a little vacation because this very day is Hugh's birthday. So, as we record, say everybody say, "Happy birthday, Hugh!"
Happy birthday.
So, as they can hear this on the recording, that happy birthday, Hugh. We are so blessed to have both of them as members of our spiritual family. So, as Clyde said, Centers for Spiritual Living has created a process where they have a theme for each year, and then some general ideas for the different churches who choose to play to follow. And this year, as he said, it's making a commitment to live a values-based spiritual life. And for me, that's a very exciting thing because I really believe that it's our values that pull us in the direction we're going, whether we're aware of it or not. And what happens is when we stop, we're aware, we honor it, then it allows that change to happen in a much more fluid fashion. And when we live in a way that is in opposition to our inherent value system, that's when we begin to get a little sideways. And no one does that on purpose, but it's kind of inherent in what happens in life. So August values, this is a fun month, love, compassion, and caring. And the statement is, we embrace love as the self-givingness of God to all creation, moving through us into expression as compassion, caring, mutual respect, and kindness. We express interest and support for the well-being of ourselves and others. We express unconditional love when observing the suffering of others, and we do what we can to give aid and show compassion. And that's exactly what that song was about, in my opinion. So, given that, the title of my talk today is Moving Forward in a Brand New Way. So, that statement and the values are so action-packed that it really prompted me to say, how would it be different if we, how would our lives change? How would our perception of ourselves change? How would our perception of the world change if we indeed did let love, kindness, caring, and compassion be our guiding value, be the force that moves us forward and the force underneath it that creates our foundation? How would our perceptions be different? And for me, I look at that and I say, well, you know, nobody gets up in the morning and says, I'm not going to be loving today. That's my goal. I'm going to dislike as many people as I can. Now, I will tell you, I would love to tell you this isn't true, but I've had some days where that is indeed, however, how I behave for just a little while. But I think that that's a part of human nature, right? Is that we have an understanding of who we are and what is really where and how we want to be. But what stops us is habit. It's habitual patterns and old beliefs. And those old beliefs are usually born of false information. Absolute false information. Because we had people in our life who were either incapable of loving or didn't know how to love, and we took that as a message that we were unlovable. That we were told by someone who didn't understand the magnificence and the divinity of who we are, that we were not enough. That in spite of all of that, that's what creates our habitual patterns, but in spite of that, underneath is the truth. The truth of who we are is we are divine reflections of God. And the qualities of God are peace, love, joy, happiness, health, wealth, wisdom, clarity, all of those things that are in God are in us. They are inherent in who we are. And our job is to simply dust away those old habits. Sounds easy? Isn't necessarily so, but that's our job, is to just shift away those old habitual patterns born of a lifetime of misinformation so that we can indeed step forward at a conscious level to choose love, choose peace, choose joy, choose happiness, choose compassion, caring, and kindness. And what I love about this philosophy is it really says our job, if we are awake and aware, makes it so much easier to make that choice. And I will tell you that I really believe it's equally important if we're awake and aware, if we have days where we go, I put my grumpy pants on this morning, and I haven't quite figured out how to get them off yet. When I tell the truth about that, it's much easier to stop being grumpy. Now, some people are here from my office, so that makes me a little nervous, but I have been known at work to say, I am sorry in advance. I don't know why I'm grumpy today, but please take nothing I say personally. It's just me and my grumpiness. And I will tell you that that is, for me, that's one of the best ways to bounce out, is to be able to just say, this is where I am, as opposed to that resistance, you know, to fight it. Because what you resist?
Persists.
Something I have really always disliked, but it's true. What we resist persists. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that today as well. But, you know, I love definitions, so I have to look at some of the definitions of the words. And love is one of those words that has so many definitions that I'm not going to go into those. I'm just going to pull a couple of great quotes from Ernest Holmes. He says, take the idea of love. It is always good to dwell on the thought of love and what it means, what must be the great attribute of love in the universe, which endlessly gives of itself to its creation. And if you think about, now I talk about this a lot too, the omnis. There's one omni, there's omnipresence, omnificent, omniscient. The one that people don't talk about a lot is omnificent. And omnificent is always creating. Always creating. So if we are made in the image and likeness of God, we are always created. What?
And we are.
That's right. And we are. Thank you, Cheryl. By the way, y'all, if you have not heard Cheryl speak, you need to get here next Sunday. I have been not here for the last couple times, and I have said to Karen with a pretty big pouted lip that a bird could come perch on, I've been out of town every time she's talked lately, so I'm here next week. Woohoo! So please do come. She's amazing. And she'll help me along here because she's fabulous. Anyway, so it endlessly gives of itself to its creation, that omnificence. And that's a part of what we are. We are constantly creating. So it says, love implies a givingness, a sharing, a communion of spirit. As one dwells on this idea, he finds that his own consciousness of love, of affection, of compassion, and of well-wishing increases until he finally sees that it is impossible for him to come into fulfillment of his destiny until he has learned to embrace all of life. Now, Ernest wrote that at a time when we were not really as aware of gender pronouns, so please just read that as all of us. But then he says, ultimately, we shall see that the universe rests on the shoulders of love, that God is love, and that all errors of man are the result of ignorance of his own true nature. So for me, if I want to have an opportunity to shift into a way where I look at the world and I see things from a more loving perspective, it's pretty much easy for us to fall into the they should, they shouldn't, I should, I shouldn't. But if I'm willing to step back from that and say, all errors of man are the result of ignorance of his own true nature. If I can pull myself up to that 50,000-foot level, it is so much easier to look at the world around me, to look at the people around me. If I don't like their behavior, that's my issue. And culturally, there are a lot of behaviors that we've agreed we don't like. But if we can really, truly see that anything unlike the expression of God really is from that very statement, errors of man are the result of ignorance of his own true nature. The Course in Miracles says everything is love or a cry for love. And so for me, because it's not easy, I think inherent in our nature, and I'll talk a little bit about this in a minute, it's not necessarily our first thought to be loving, to be kind, to be compassionate. But he says, love is the central flame of the universe, nay, the very fire itself. Love is an essence, an atmosphere which defies analysis and does life itself, as does life itself. The essence of love, while elusive, pervades everything, fires the heart, stimulates the emotions, renews the soul, and proclaims the spirit. And that fire is what drives manifestation. A lot of times people will go, they'll say something, stop. It's like, well, no, what causes manifestation is that fire that's in us. Now, if you think something long enough, it creates a fire in you. But it's to remember that it's the fire in us that pushes us forward. So in it, the rest of some of the definitions, caring is pretty simple. Kindness, sympathy, understanding, displaying kindness and concern for others, compassion, warm-hearted, loving, tender, helpful, concerned. Those are all pretty things that you'd expect. But the definition of compassion is one that I love. My favorite one is the definition by Pema Chodron. She says, compassion is not a relationship between the healer and the wounded. Oh, do some of us think that sometime? Compassion is not a relationship between the healer and the wounded. That's why we often say here that we serve life because it's holy, not because it's broken. And she says, only when we know our own darkness well can we be present with the darkness of others. Compassion becomes real when we recognize our shared humanity. Our shared humanity. So there's a lot of talk about the difference between compassion and empathy, and there's an interesting woman, her name is Teresa Wiseman, she's a nursing scholar, and she has studied people in all kinds of professions who have to have empathy to effectively do their job. And she said that she, in all of her research, she's come up with four qualities of empathy. Perspective taking, which is the ability to see someone else's position as their truth. Not yours, but theirs. Perspective taking. Try to see the world from their perspective. The second quality is staying out of judgment. I don't know about you. Not my strong suit always. But when we actually being in judgment is kind of what our brains are wired to do. I'm going to talk about that in a second. Then the third quality is recognizing emotion in others. So that's pretty vulnerable, because to recognize an emotion in someone else, I have to recognize it in myself. And a lot of research has been done lately about emotional intelligence and emotional awareness. And there's a group of researchers who have come up with, this is very sad, that there are basically, how many emotions do you think we can most of us identify? A lot. So I will say that this particular group, that's probably true, because we are focused on that sort of thing. But the people at large, from the study they've done, is basically they got three emotions they can identify very easily. When they're feeling them, not being able to talk about and define them, but when they're feeling them. And they are happy, sad, and pissed off. And that would be a quote from the research: happy, sad, and pissed off. And underneath pissed off is frightened. But we teach here to learn, we teach to learn to look underneath and to see what's driving us, to see what the underpinning is of what we're feeling. And that's why I believe people in this particular philosophy have a pretty easy time of becoming really empathetic with one another. And then the last quality is being able to communicate that you recognize that emotion. So you have to know more than happy, sad, and pissed off if you want to be able to communicate it. But one thing that it's not, what empathy is not, it's not trying to fix somebody, which is really what a lot of us want to do when we're in the presence of someone in pain. What can I do to make it better? Just tell me and I'll do it. It is not silver lining, the spiritual bypass. Well, you know, this is all good, because when you're in the middle, having somebody tell you how there's great understanding at the other side, for me, I don't know about you, but for me, it makes me want to slap them. Yeah, because that's pissed off, Jane says, absolutely. Because a part of what, for me personally, and what the research shows is that when someone is in a position where they need empathy, it really is somebody to say, gee, I don't have a clue. I really don't have a clue. I can't imagine what you must be feeling. But I just want to know I care about you. I want you to know I care. That is what, for me, empathy is really about. not that silver lining. And a part of us, it's not one-upping or telling our own stories, but we do those sorts of things because we're pretty uncomfortable. Frequently, when we're in the presence of somebody in distress, it's because we're not comfortable there. And so that's where the need to want to fix it, quick, dust it over and make it better. So Ernest Holmes says, we can have no understanding of divine compassion unless we ourselves first exercise compassion. The very judgment by which we judge others becomes a self-judgment. It is as if the law of life were giving back to each of us exactly what we have projected into it, as though everything that goes out from us must again return by a law of action and reaction. And that's from Help for Today. So action and reaction, the law of reaction, and I think that action and react, a lot of us really, a part of why I'm willing to say to people, I have my grumpy pants on today, is because it helps me break the law of reaction, right? Where somebody pokes and you go, ah, or whatever your version, mine is, ah, but everybody has their own version of. Some people curl up in a ball, some people get, sad, whatever it may be. But anyway, a part of what allows us to step forward and to look at life and to operate in a new way is that we can begin to understand what drives the bus. So I have been just obsessed of late with the neuroscience research. It is so fascinating to me. And I will tell you what I have learned with the folks who are studying meditation and spiritual practice as it relates to the neuroscience has changed me at a deep and profound level. It has changed my perception of the world. It's helped change my perception of myself. It's actually changed my spiritual practice. And here's why. There are the different parts of our brain, the prefrontal cortex, that's the newest part of our brain. There are 9 functions of the prefrontal cortex. It's empathy, insight, response flexibility, emotional regulation, body regulation, morality, intuition, attuned communication, and fear modulation. So all that's this brand new, the part of the brain that is just brand new. The limbic brain, however, is the one that's been around for a while. Some people call it the lizard brain. Fight, flight, freeze. That's the dominant experience of the limbic brain, and our emotions live there. That they have found that our emotions live in the limbic brain, and it wants to know, am I safe? What do people want from me? So they found that fMRIs are when they wire you up and they stuff you in an MRI tube and they show you things to stimulate different emotions, and then they can see where the different things light up in your brain. And they've found that in the testing that they would say to people in between tests, okay, just relax now. And they expected the brains to slow down. Instead, they got very active. So out of that, they began to study that. And they came up with what they refer to as the default network mode of the mind. And it is, as the brain has evolved, it has gone from knowing that noise coming at us might be a saber-toothed tiger or a T-Rex coming for us. We don't have to worry about that. We don't have to worry about stocking our supplies for the winter, or for us it would be the summer. So what it does is it turns on our sense of self, okay? Our sense of well-being. So the brain has evolved, and it has what they call a negativity bias. And Rick Hansen says, the brain is like Velcro for negative, and Teflon for positive. That's the brain has a negativity bias. So when we aren't thinking, we don't have a cognitive thought, if we aren't awake, aware, and conscious, then this default network mode starts, and it's critical, it's judgmental, it usually turns on you and is mean and nasty. And it's always looking for a story to have it make sense, because the brain wants to know how to keep us safe. So the bad news about the fact that the brain recognizes a story's pattern of beginning, middle, and end, and they need to have something that allows it to make sense so that it can dump those fabulous chemicals that it happens when it comes to understand, is it doesn't care if it's true. Absolutely doesn't care if it's accurate. it just needs a story to have it make it understand. It has a self-referential process, so it's all about me. It has the ability to time travel back into the past, out into the future, take those past events, chew on them like a cow chewing their cud, then pick it all up and throw it out into the future as to how it surely will be. And then the last one is then that creates our worldview. So the brain wants to know who's a good guy, who's a bad guy, is it safe, is it not safe, and what do we need to do about it? Well, I have found that when I first heard about that, I thought, that's just God awful. But what I found was, if you realize that that's just your brain being your brain, it is much easier to not take it seriously, right? To just go, oh, I have looked at this as just all bad, or I have, you know, any of those characteristics. Oh, it's my brain being my brain. And it allows us to stop and to stop that cycle of spinning. I don't know about you, but I think that many of us are like a cow chewing their cud. And cows have seven stomachs, and they chew on the food, and it comes back up, and it goes. They chew it a while, down, up, down, up, down, just constantly chewing it over. And that's what the default network mode of our brain does. And so you have an interchange with somebody, and Jane and I share, and she says something, and I go, well, you know what? I didn't like her anyway. Right? Because the brain's always looking for it to make sense. It wants, that's right. It's always looking for some way to make it make sense. So for me, to realize that the limbic brain turns off the prefrontal cortex when it kicks in, it allows me to go, I don't have to believe every thought that runs through my brain. Because you know what? They're not always true. They are frequently based on those old habitual patterns and beliefs that have nothing to do with the truth of who you are. So to be able to step into living a life from a new way of being, I first have to be able to realize that the habitual patterns aren't the truth. That there's a new way that I can look at it. And to do that, I have to be able to first accept that they exist, right? I have to be able to go, I have my grumpy pants on today. Because if we don't tell the truth about where we are, it's like trying to take a trip. I use this example a lot. We're going to go from Phoenix to San Diego. We're going to take 10, and eventually we're going to hit, if we're driving 10, going to maybe go down to 8, or we'll just stay on until we'll end up on 5, right? End up in San Diego. You can plan that trip a lot of different ways. If you're in Portland, however, you're going to be on 5 for a really long time, right? And you're just going to be turning wrong all the time. To just honor and accept and tell the truth about where you are allows you to put in a course correction and then really realistically plan how to get from here to there. So it's important for me to be able to do, Brené Brown talks about this process in her book, Rising Strong. And she says, the first thing we need to do is realize we've been hooked. Now, Pema Chodron talks about being hooked all the time, and since I heard her first talk about that, I thought, some days I'm a wide-mouthed bass, you know? I mean, I can get hooked so easy, and I'll be fighting that with that lure, you know, way down the road before I go, oh, hooked. But while we're hooked, right, the stories begin in the brain about why it should or shouldn't be, who's safe, who's not safe, who's right, who's wrong, what I should or shouldn't do. So the first step is to realize that you've been hooked, that you have something going on, and then to be curious about it. Now, most of us really don't want to be curious about our emotions. In our culture, we eat at them, drink at them, smoke at them, have sex at them, shop at them. A lot of things but feel them. And a part of why I love this community is that we teach that that doesn't have to be the way it is. So it's to be curious without judgment. And it's that without judgment part that can be a little bit of a kicker. It's a little aggravating without judgment. But if we start, if we can really, you realize you're hooked, and then you can go, something's just not right, right? This whole story that I'm telling myself, just not quite right. Not quite right. And then you can begin to unwind it, and you can begin to then look and make new choices. So if you look at accepting what is, You also, not only do you have to accept what is inside of you, but you also have to accept that the divine in you is the truth of who you are. And if we can get to the point where there's some real base where we believe that, it is also much easier to not pay attention to the brain when it slips off into its default network mode. And they found that people with consistent spiritual practice get out of the default network mode much faster, and they have determined that they have an alternative network mode that allows them to say, this isn't true, here's a new way of looking at it. And I believe that that's what we teach, is we teach people to stop and say, the truth of who we are is that we are indeed made in the image and the likeness of the divine, that every quality of God that exists, exists in me. And my job is to simply fan that flame. He talked about the fire. Our job is to fan that flame. So it's accepting both the humanity in us, but the divinity as well. And when we accept that that is real rather than just some pie-in-the-sky notion, it's so much easier to chart a new course, to live life in a new way. So Ernest also says, it is impossible for you to receive that which your mind refuses to accept. Right? We have to be willing to accept the magnificence of who we are. And you know what? It's a lot easier frequently for us to accept the crap than the good. Yesterday at the women's retreat, Jane did an extraordinary exercise where we looked at what do we present that we want the world to see of us, and on the other side of the mask was what do we not want them to know. And I will tell you, then we shared those with each other, and I will tell you how often I would go, ooh, I forgot that one, when it was the bad stuff, right? Ooh, should add that one on my list too. But to be able to say, if I can dig in and know the truth of who I am, then making that choice to lead the way with love, to respond with compassion, to respond with understanding, it makes such a huge difference. So, that's lovely. What do we do now? Right? So we talked about breaking the cycle, the cycle of old habits and behaviors. I will tell you, I believe the next most important thing you can do is be grateful. Be grateful for what is, and that's not always easy. I will tell you, I was in an accident many, many years ago, parked car going one, I guess, around 80. There wasn't pretty much any part of me that wasn't jerked around. And I had chronic pain for many, many years, never talked about it because I couldn't do anything about it. But I'll tell you what it is, I hated my body for being broken. I was so angry that I was in pain all the time. So I began to work with somebody, and I tried everything. I mean, you name it, I have tried it. I have tried it. And the person I work with now most consistently said, we had an impossible project for each class we took. He said, let's make the impossible project that you don't have pain in your body. And I went, I didn't know you smoked crack. Because I've tried everything. What I hadn't tried? I hadn't tried loving my body. I hadn't tried blessing my body. I hadn't tried being grateful. Even my body, my buggered up little body has served me greatly. And when I stopped and began to go back and say, can I be grateful for it exactly in its current form? Only then did it begin to change. And I will tell you, I probably have 90% less pain than I did when I started that class. And I really hold it to the fact that I stopped and said, stop judging and hating your body. And that's just one example. If you look at when you want to change, not only what you resist persist, if I just stop at that, if I just stop resisting, then I'm not set up to make a good choice. But what we know that what you put out into the world comes back. So if you stand from a position of looking at what's beautiful, looking what you can be grateful for, looking for what you can say, this is good. I'm glad. I'm grateful. And I know for me, when I want to change, if I am willing to take that step and say, am I willing to be grateful for this right here, right now, as it is? Even if it has some conditions and manifestations that I don't like, I have to first find the way to be grateful for what is. And then I think it's also seeing the beauty. Then the next step is we begin to say, okay, what do I want? Right? What do I want? Well, one thing I will say is beware of not that. If you've ever had a job that you didn't like, when you look for a new job, you go, not that one. I just want, whatever it is in this new one, I want it to be not that. I want to have not that jerky boss. I want to have whatever. And so even though you're putting out into the universe some things that you want, because you can stop and say, I'd rather have a boss that respects me and I respect them. But if the underlying emotion is, I just want not that, well, the universe doesn't hear not, right? It hears that which has the most fire, has the most power and juice. And so not that, here's not. So it's to look at and try to deal with, for me, being able to find the beauty and the gratitude in what is helps me have not that, so that I can then make a choice that is one that will manifest at a higher level. And Marianne Williams and I have loved this prayer from the moment I ever heard her utter it from her mouth. Lord, help me to see this differently. When I'm in the middle, that's what I have to do. Help me to see this differently. Because right now, I'm in all that other stuff. Help me to see this differently. And for me, that's gratitude, beauty, joy, thanksgiving. Be grateful for what I have. See the beauty in it. Help me to see that differently. How can I go back to seeing this from a position of love or caring or compassion? And then we get to do the fun stuff. We get to choose again, because this philosophy teaches that what has happened in the condition today doesn't have to be the condition for forever. Ernest Holmes tells us, look the discordant condition in the face and then turn to the truth. Look the discordant condition in the face and turn to the truth, knowing that that condition has no power over me. That condition has no power over me. Because a part of what happens is we begin to think that it does. So in this we teach, it doesn't have to have power over you. We can choose again. We can see it differently. And I will invite you all to really spend this week looking for places and things that you can be grateful for about what exists in your life, right here, right now, in this moment. See what beauty you can find in every and any condition of your life. See how you can find ways not to have that intellectual gratefulness, well, the gift is, but to really feel it. Allow yourself. When I got to the point with my body where I could say, my God, my knees have been trashed, but I have almost 63 years where they've worked. That's pretty good. I'm still mobile. I hike. I walk. I have a trainer who comes in and tortures me twice a week. So choose again, and when you choose, see if you can find a way to let love, kindness, caring, and compassion be that which guides you. And I promise you that you will live a life in a brand new way. So let's take a moment and anchor this in prayer. So right here, right now, in the presence of that sweet, 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 beautiful spirit that knows only love, only peace, only joy, only happiness. It is that incredible power that allows us to step aside from our old habits, our old beliefs, and to see the truth of who we are, the truth of who each and every person is, the truth of everything, everywhere, that love is indeed the guiding force. It is that fire which creates all things. It is the spot upon which we stand. And that here in this moment, when we see this endless, endless giving of God, and our receiving and giving as well. That in that space where our hearts, our minds, our spirits open, everything is new. Everything is new. everything. And it makes way for kindness and caring and compassion and understanding, so that everyone everywhere can be seen as common in humanity. The truth of me is the truth of you. It is the truth of everyone, everywhere, regardless of beliefs, regardless of conditions, regardless of actions. The truth is that we are one. We are one, and what happens in me happens everywhere, and what happens out there happens in me. And so it is my job to choose love, choose kindness, choose happiness, choose joy, choose forgiveness, choose compassion and understanding, being willing to see another way. And to do that with a sense of kindness and understanding. So I know that as we stand here in this place where we know the truth of who we are, that regardless of any external condition, that we are love. We are kindness. We are caring. We are compassion. We are wisdom. We are joy. We are all of that and more. Because God is all of that and more, and nothing can break that. Nothing can change that. Nothing can negate that. It is always present. It is always the foundation upon which we stand. The foundation where we live and move and have our being. So I give thanks for this gorgeous philosophy that teaches us that we matter, that we make a difference, that we have choice, that it is always an opportunity to make all things brand new. So as we go forward this week, we go forward with a sense of excitement and enthusiasm, knowing that every choice we make is one of power. That we can let go of all that doesn't serve us. We can know that there is always the opportunity to choose again. So I give thanks for each and every person here who has taken time out of their day to stop, to reflect, to learn, to experience the truth of who they are, regardless of the conditions. For that time spent here in this moment fuels and feeds love. It feeds caring, it feeds connection, it feeds compassion and kindness. And I know as we go forward, that is what drives us, it's what pulls us, it's what allows us to make new choices and go forward with life in a brand new way. So I release this with such deep, deep gratitude, knowing that the principles are true no matter what. I am so grateful to know that this works, that this is true about me, and that my choices matter. I release it into that exquisite synchronicity that is both love and law. And the law says yes, yes, yes. And so with excitement, enthusiasm, and expectancy, I release this knowing that the good is mine right now. And so it is. Thank you.